Sis Marina Rav Shlita, Nachaim Aruchim, Paul Preston and Rabbi Talman for their respective yacht sites. Something which is often perplexing. You come into a shul and they're davening a different way to the way you're used to, and you're not quite sure what to do. Do you do your own thing? Do you do theirs? When do you conform? When don't you conform? And the question comes up often with family traditions conflicting with the traditions of the community you belong to. Or let's say your father comes from a Hasidic background, but he sends you to a school where everything is Nusach Ashkenaz, your yeshiva is that way, so you feel obliged to conform to that. And then when you grow older, do you then carry on what you grew up with, or do you go back to your old family tradition? Or if you move to a new community, a woman who gets married, these questions come up often when it comes to Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Sfad. In addition to Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Sfad, there's also the Nusach Sfaradi, Eidutz Mizrach, which is really something completely different. And although we may touch on that today, my intention is not to deal with it so much. The questions of Nusach Ashkenaz and Sfad stem from the fact that the people who are davening Nusach Sfad all seem to be coming from Ashkenazi backgrounds. And if you look back in the history, Russia and Poland and Hungary and other Eastern countries, if you go back to the Middle Ages, it was all Nusach Ashkenaz. So how did Nusach Sfad come about? Because these are Ashkenazim who were starting to daven Nusach Sfad.
Prime example is Sukma.
Yes.
That part of Romania, Hungary, where they was Nusach Ashkenaz. But they're all
daven
Sfad nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, in the Hasidic world, you won't find anybody who seems to daven Nusach Ashkenaz. Well, we're not going to try and delve too much into the origins and the history and the sociology and so on, but the Nusach Sfad is attributed primarily to the emergence of the Hasidic movement under the Baal Shem Tov, and subsequently the Ari HaKadosh, who was a famous Kabbalist in the city of Sfat. And you might ask, well, what right did he have to change anything? It seems that the Ari himself didn't really change anything, but he had an Ashkenazi father and a Sfadi mother, and he was the world-renowned specialist in Kabbalah, and what he was trying to do in his own tefillahs was incorporate Kabbalistic ideas into the tefillah without actually changing the numbers of brachas and the essential structure. And that some of these Kabbalistic ideas he took from the Sephardim, who had their own Nusach, and it was his followers who emulated him because of his great stature to try and follow on what he did. But it never doesn't seem as though he ever stood up one day and said, right, I want you all to change. It didn't happen that way. And so we are presented with a fait accompli nowadays amongst the Ashkenazi world of two different Nuschos. So although the Nusach Ashkenaz was always the prevalent one, nowadays you go around and you can find we Ashkenaz, Nusach Ashkenaz people are often being outnumbered by the number of Nusach Sfad shuls and minyanim there are going on. Indeed, things have changed so much that really you now often go into a shul which has its own Nusach Ashkenaz minyan and its own Nusach Sfad minyan, which is a far cry from what happened in the original times when complete countries in Europe were only davening Nusach Ashkenaz. So that's really a bit of a background. To what extent do we aim for uniformity, and do we keep to our traditions of our family and so on? So in a nutshell, we go straight into the Mishnah Brura in Siman Samach Ches Arachayim, and there in Sifkot and Dalet, he makes the point. He says, "Haminhagim shenegu b'shoshe atzila." So those customs which we have become a practice to in the davening, l'kulei alma ein l'shanos. One should not change what one is doing. Minag Makomo, you should go according to the minag of the place you're in. Kagon Minusach Ashkenaz the Sfad Olehepach, whether it's Nusach Ashkenaz or Sfad or vice versa, the Cholkai Gavna. And there actually he uses the phrase Minag Makomo, not Minag Mishpachto, not the custom of his family, but the minag of the place you're in. And it seems that's why a lot of people, when they moved to Eretz Yisrael, and the majority there was in Nusach Sfad, that they decided to conform to what they were doing. And maybe that's why many changes took place.
So isn't Eretz Yisrael Nusach Agro, which is a bit of a mix.
Yes, you're right. There is the Nusach Agro, but in terms of what is the majority, I think nowadays you'll find, certainly amongst people of Ashkenazi descent, the majority are governing Nusach Sfad.
Well, the English type shuls,
yes,
actually daven Nusach Agro, which is basically Nusach Ashkenaz, but they add on, vidui and things like that.
Yes. That's true. So we do have varieties, and even when it comes to the Nusach Sfad, there are different varieties. There are some people like the Chabadniks who daven what they call Nusach Ari, but really there are 6 or 7 different variations of what the Ari was doing, and what they call now Nusach Ari is just one of those variations. Whereas Nusach Sfad does emanate from the Ari. And then, interestingly, the Mishnah Berura says, Ki Yud Beis She'orim Bashamayim, there are 12 gates in heaven, Keneged Yud Beis Shevotim, corresponding to the 12 tribes. V'chol Shevet Yesh Lo Shah, each tribe has its own gate, V'minag Levad, so that each one conforms to the minag, the custom which they're practicing, which is handed down to them, because there are 12 different ways. And it's quite surprising that this is brought by the Mishnah Berurah, because he has just told us not to change, and this phrase really comes through from the Mogen Avraham and the Arizal. It's the Ari who said there are 12 different gates. One should stick to the tribe that one belongs to. Well, nowadays we don't really know what tribe we belong to. So what do we do? But the followers of the Ari were saying that his Nusach was like the 13th gate, corresponding to the 13 Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is called Shar HaKolel. That includes everybody. So if you're worried that your prayer is not going to be accepted because you are using a tefillah of a different shevet, of a different tribe, to the one whom you actually belong to, not to worry. You've got the 13th one, which is Shar Kolel, which includes everything, includes everybody. So your prayers will be accepted. And that is the svara of the Hasidim, that we have what's called the Shar HaKolel. And this is the expression which comes from the origin of the Arizal. And I find it a bit of a paradox that Mishnah Berurah brings this down, because he was obviously of Ashkenazi descent, who has just been saying, don't change from Ashkenaz to Sfad, but the whole svara of those doing Nusach Sfad is Shar HaKolel. We want to be all embracing to make sure that we get through the gates, as it were. So that's the Lashon of the Mishnah Berurah. The quote he gives is from the Shar HaKavonos, which is not really written by the Arizal, but Rav Chaim Vital, one of his main followers, and you've got then these differences of these different gates and the speciality attributed to each gate. And if one looks in the Piskei Teshuvos, he brings down from the Maggid of Mezerich, Maggid of Rav Liakov, says that those people who are davening Nusach Sfad, who are adopting this 13th gate, as it were, they don't really know which tribe they're from, so it's a belt and braces job. And the Ari did this thing of combining all the different traditions amongst them. The Chidor, who was a Sfadi of Chaim Yehuda David Azulay, he says not to worry when you're davening the Sfadi way, because the Sfadi way encompasses all the different 12 gates. Well, there you have it. It sounds very good and political, to make sure you're covered. Not everyone takes this approach. The Eishel Avrom in Nun Aleph, he says, you know, you've got shuls you walk into, they do Hodu before Baruch Shema, or Baruch Shema before Hodu. It's not just really slight differences in words, it's the order in which you're davening, and we should all try, if possible, to be uniform and to keep to the tradition which is handed down to us. Rav Ariel writes on this in Tchumin, volume 9. He says it's not so simple when we talk about this business with the 12 gates and the 12 tribes. He asks, did Chazal, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, they formulated the davening, did they actually formulate 12 different sets of different prayers? Of course they didn't. So how can one suggest this whole business about the 12 gates? He says, during the time of the Second Temple, not only is it the fact that there were 12 tribes, but they started to intermingle with each other. That although we have our 12 tribes, we became Ke'ish Echod V'Lev Echod as one. And in fact, he says, when we have this mini festival on the 15th of Av, Tu B'Av, one of the things we are celebrating is that on Tu B'Av it was instituted that intermarriage between the tribes became permitted. Originally, because of Yerusha or other reasons, there was no intermarrying between one tribe and another, and on Tu B'Av it became the formula that one can marry to different tribes. So he says, if we're going to start saying that there are 12 different tribes and therefore different kinds of tefillah, that is not consistent with the fact that the tribes intermingled and intermarried and became more unified. The Chasam Sofer writes a long tshuva about this in Simon Tesvov Arachayim. Well, there are two chapters which look like the headed Tesvov, and it's the second one. He says, there are a lot of people who think that the Nusach Sfad is better, is greater quality. And therefore, the Hasidim will tell you that you can change from Ashkenaz to Sfad, but you may not change back to, from Sfad to Ashkenaz, because there are more extra tiddly bits in the Sfad. So they'll say there's greater Kedusha in the Nusach Sfad. But that not logically follow, because if you start adding words, well, maybe it's like adding mitzvahs, and you're not allowed to add to what you've already got. There's an inyan of Baal Tosef. So surely adding on is not necessarily in itself a wonderful thing. So which is better, Nusach Ashkenaz?
Was he agreeing with that it's better, or disagreeing with it, or not?
The attitude of the Chasam Sofer is, you should not change from what is handed down to you, but he says no Nusach is better than another. He says no one should think that they have more importance than the other. In fact, he writes this in such a strong way that tradition hands down that he actually apologized at a later date to the Baal Yismach Moshe, a famous Hasidic Rebbe, Reb Moshe Teitelbaum. But the Chasam Sofer says, you know, look, all the rabbis from France, the famous rabbis, Rashi, Tosfos, the Rosh, the Tur, they all davened Nusach Ashkenaz. They didn't know what tribe they came from, although we might have a good idea, but their prayers went up to heaven. So who is to suggest that if you daven from a different tribe that your prayer will not be accepted? He says the Ari was a Sfardi, although, as I said earlier, it seems that the Ari was only a Sfardi through his mother, not from his father. He incorporated extra text, but he says all these people who adopted Nusach Sfard were Ashkenazim, they were not Sephardim. So he suggests that really the strength of tradition lies much more in Nusach Ashkenaz than in Nusach Sfard. Although he then says no one is greater than the other, but he accepts that what the Ari Adal was incorporating Kabbalah, the Kabbalistic ideas, into the traditional Nusach Ashkenaz approach. But he says, look, if it's easier for you to pray on what you understand, it's important that you understand your tefillahs, fine. And he says, even my own Rebbes, says the Chasam Sofer, even my own teachers, Rav Nosson Adler and the Baal HaFlor, they did eventually pray according to the Ari. Well, he said, I saw them davening at the Omud, and when they davened at the Omud, they were doing Nusach Sfad, even though some people in the congregation may have differed. I mean, one goes according to the custom of the place when you daven at the Omud, certainly. And there are some communities, even here in northwest London, where they daven Nusach Sfad, and the majority of the people in the shul are davening Nusach Ashkenaz. In fact, the query. Right, well, we'll come to the ideas of Lotus Skozadu later on, but I understand that Dain Erentroy's minion in Shihol Park, virtually all the members are davening Nusach Ashkenaz, including Dain Erentroy himself, but they daven Nusach Sfad because the first two Gaboim of the new Beis HaMedrash were Nusach Sfad, and that's the way they instituted it. And once that happened, you can't change.
I heard they only got permission to set up a new Beis HaMedrash if it was different, and that's.
You mean permission from the council? Or?
Well, they very justified.
I've never seen a permission, planning permission, no, with a condition in it.
That you justified to all the parties.
To justify the departure, the breakaway aspect. Fine. Even the Ariya Kodesh says the Chasam Sofer, that one should not change to a different nusach if one doesn't understand its wording. He says, you know, at least the most important thing is you understand what you're talking about. You should have the right kavanah. But then says the Chasam Sofer, but ordinary people like us, and by us he includes himself, he said, should not change. He quotes the Magen Avraham, don't change. He says, and they should not consider that Nusach Sfad is more superior. He says, at the end of the day, you should do what you feel comfortable with. You know, you are relating to Hashem and you're doing it in a certain way. But there are lots who disagree with the Chasam Sofer, particularly those from the Hasidic stock. The famous Divrei Chaim of Zantz in Chelek Beis, Simon Ches, he disagrees with the Chasam Sofer and he says, well, all we're trying to do is combine the Nigle with the Nista, the hidden, the Kabbalistic, with what is revealed. And the Munkach Rebbe, who was also Hasidish, the Minchas Elozor, he says, what you're not allowed to do is to change to Sfadi, the Eidut Mizrach, from Ashkenazi. But when you're doing the Sfad, it's part and parcel of the Ashkenazi package. And he refers to the Ari HaKodesh as doing this Nusach HaKolel, the Shar HaKolel, that we are all embracing the Kabbalistic together with the traditional. The Talmud of the Chasam Sofer, the Maram Shik in Choshen Mishpot, Simon Chof Dalud, he spells out what the Chasam Sofer is saying even further. He says, although the Magen Avraham refers to the heavenly gates for each custom, if your soul is, you feel that you are yearning towards a particular derech and to a particular custom, Gesundheit, okay, that's fine. You don't have to worry. There is, in fact, the Chovas Halavovas, who in general terms talks about that if a person finds that he's yearning for a particular mitzvah, for a particular custom, he shouldn't hold himself back, because it has an added connection to his soul if a person has this hargosha, has this feeling. And in that connection, there is a pasuk in Tehillim, in Lamed Zayin, in Tehillim 37:23, and this pasuk is saying, so the steps one does is directed by Hashem, but he delights in his way. If you've got that chefetz, and you've got the same idea at the beginning of Tehillim, but if a person feels that is the way for him in the right derech, provided it's within the parameters of the Orthodox threshold, then that is praiseworthy if one follows that way. There are others who are more flexible. The Maharashtam, in his Tshuvas Arachaim Siman Lamed Hei, gives a well-known Teshuva, and he says, well, due to our wanderings, a lot of people arrived in a country called Togroma, which is translated as Turkey, not the most ideal place to live in at the moment, but he says a lot of Jewish people ended up in Turkey, customs got mixed up, and everybody was changing to the Sephardi way when they came to countries like Turkey, which were well inhabited by Sephardim. And he said, it's true that it's good to keep to Terasimecho. The posuk is Al Titosh Terasimecho, but nevertheless, if you come to a community and it's widespread in that community to be following a particular derech, then you should follow the way of the community. So his attitude is, set aside what your family custom is in favor of what your community custom is. But he says, don't deviate from the way of your forefathers if there is a trace of an issur. So when it's coming to minhagim generally, he says, if there is a tzad issur in something, then avoid it. But otherwise, when it comes to davening, he says there is no tzad issur and you can change. So the Maharashtam is very flexible. He was a Sfardi there himself. He lived from 1506 to 1589. So that is around the time when the Ari was also living and things began to change the way they did within the Ashkenazi world. he says that Sfardim are really only saying what our sages enacted. The Sfardi tradition is much more simple and straightforward, he said, because you don't have all these extra piyutim like you get in the Ashkenazi world. The Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo Sfardi, was very much against the addition of all these piyutim and yotzeres and marovas, and it was the Ramadha who, for the Ashkenazim, defended the custom. The Ibn Ezra himself was very much against the extra piyutim. And what he said was, the Sfardi way is more understandable. He says, though, if you look at the Ashkenazi piyutim, a lot of people just don't understand what they're talking about. I take for an example, Parsha Zohar. Well, there are art scrolls which actually try to translate that, but first try saying it by heart. His criticism, the Marashdam, of the Ashkenazi davening is that so many parts of it people do not readily understand. And when the Anshei Knesset Abdullah formulated the davening, they deliberately tried to use a simple Hebrew so that as many people as possible could understand it. But the Marashdam, according to the Chasam Sofer, was not aware of the Mogen Avrom, who said, don't change. But the Marashdam says, stop condemning those who adopt the Sfardi way. But he says the Sfardi way. He's not talking really about Nusach Sfard, but the principle we can draw from it, that whether we're talking about Sfard or Sephardi, that there is justification, in his view, to forsake the custom if there is no Sad Isur. So, as the Marashdam.
What is a Sad Isur?
Sad Isur is a tradition where if you take on a custom and there is a shadow of doubt as to whether it's actually permitted. The example like that might be the Minhag of Gebrox on Pesach. Now, Gebrox is only a custom, not to mix your matzah with water. So I and many others amongst us had it handed down to us that it's perfectly okay to eat knaidlach in your soup on Pesach made with matzah meal and water. The Vilna Gaon was so adamant that it's perfectly allowed to eat the brox that he actually displayed in his window pieces of knaidlach so that everybody should know that it's alright to eat knaidlach. But the Hasidim, if you go amongst Hasidim nowadays, some of them won't even put matzah on the table, let alone mix it with water. I mean, well, you're depriving yourself of Oneg Yom Tov from all these lovely foods, aren't you? But the idea of Gebrox comes about because there's a concern that some part of the matzah might not have been fully baked, and therefore it might become chometz when water is added to it. Now, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's ignorance. Now, I have to have respect for my brother-in-law and others who keep to this. My son-in-law had it handed down to him to keep to the custom. So we have to respect other Jewish people, what they do, sincerely held views. One view I've heard about as to the concern about Gebrox is that when the matzah was being baked and they had a small environment where it was confined, that and a door might open and a wind was blowing from the area where the flour was being stored, and flour can disperse very easily with a slight amount of wind, it's possible that maybe flour blew onto matzah which was already baked. So the matzah came out of the oven, it was standing ready to cool down, and maybe speckles of flour came onto it afterwards. So then there is a sorrow to say that afterwards, when it's mixed with water, the flour which came on the matzah after it had been baked could become machmitz, could become chomet. That is a sorrow. I don't go along with it because that is my tradition not to go along with it, but we can respect those who have the view. That is a rationale. So there, this Hasid will say, there is a tzad isur. A tzad isur means there is a possibility that you will end up eating chometz. So then we will respect that, even though it's not the din. That's what we mean by tzad isur. But, you know, Gebrox, we can have a whole share about Gebrox when it comes to one Pesach if you want, but only if it's by popular demand, because I think most people here don't have such a custom. But nowadays you see these hotels advertising for Pesach, you know, communal seder, non-gebrok seder. It's become very widespread.
On the eighth day they allow it.
They do allow on the eighth day, on the grounds that if kelim are not used for a whole year for something which is forbidden, then there are grounds to allow those kelim afterwards. And to stress that it is only a custom, because unfortunately the children are growing up in those communities and they think gebrok is chometz. So at least by having on the eighth day the gebroks, it's to send a message through to the young generation that it is only a custom or a chumra. The Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, coming back to our Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Sfad, writes in Chelek Beis Simon Chof Dalad, a question brought to him about somebody who comes from a Hasidic family, but he was sent to a Nusach Ashkenaz school and yeshiva, so he grew up in a Nusach Ashkenaz environment where he was trained to daven according to Nusach Ashkenaz. But his father was davening Nusach Sfad. So he asks Rav Moshe Feinstein, now that I've left yeshiva, where everybody was davening Nusach Ashkenaz, should I now go back to what my father was doing, because, you know, one follows the tradition of one's parents, and therefore, should I therefore go back to Nusach Sfad, which my father had? A very interesting question, a very practical one. My father didn't want to confuse me, so he knew that he was sending me to a Nusach Ashkenaz school, so he let me just get on with Nusach Ashkenaz. But now that I've grown up, should I really go back to Nusach Sfad, because that is my family tradition? And it's interesting, because Rav Moshe says, well, you know, who broke away from whom, he's asking. Where did it all really start? Because the Nusach Sfad, if you go back to Poland and Hungary and Russia, Siberia, all these eastern countries, they were all Ashkenaz. There was no such thing as a Nusach Sfad before the 1500s. So, who broke away from whom? Where did Nusach Sfad come from? It's really only because of the Baal Shem Tov and the Ari that it changed to Nusach Sfad. And relatively, in Jewish history, that's only a short time ago, if you're talking about 300-400 years. So he says, let's take back a step in history. Okay, you want to go back to your father and respect what your father did, but where did he get it from? Who's really changed? You or your father? So his pesach is, just stick with your Nusach Ashkenaz as the way you grew up, and you don't have to go back to the Nusach Sfad. Of course, this is not really in the view of the Hasidim, who, when they see this, but
Rav Moshe presumably doesn't Nusach Ashkenaz,
of course.
Yeah. Rav Moshe was Nusach Ashkenaz, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was Nusach Ashkenaz, the Chazon Ish was Nusach Ashkenaz, the Stipe Lagon Nusach Ashkenaz, and they all said that people who daven Nusach Sfad can change to Nusach Ashkenaz. Why? Because we were there first, and not vice versa. So they're saying that you can change from Sfad to Ashkenaz, but not from Ashkenaz to Sfad. Well, certainly that is not the view of the Hasidim, and we explained why. And then there's another question. Do you have to do a Toras Nadorim if you change? It seems that you don't have to, because what you did was maybe the misguided thing, that you don't have to do a Toras Nadorim. But Rav Moshe indicates that what is the community custom is really regarded stronger as what is the family custom. So if you're all in a town and that whole town is davening Nusach Sfad, then it would be correct to daven Nusach Sfad if you are living in that town rather than just being a guest there. And he even refers to the idea of gebroks as the custom. But he's implying quite clearly that you can't change from Ashkenaz to Sfad, although you can change from Sfad to Ashkenaz. So Rav Yaakov Kanievsky, he's saying that if you brought up different to what your family have done, you can continue to what you've been brought up with. That is your Teras Imecho, because the whole question is Al Titosh Teras Imecho. But if you've been brought up to do it a certain way, that is your Teras Imecho. Training the children, though, a different way, that's one should not really do, says Rav Moshe. Rav Avadi Yosef, who of course is the Sfadi tradition, he writes in Yabia Omer in volume 6, chapter 10, that he says the Sfadim Eidut Mizrach custom was never corrupted, because the Sfardim never used to move around a lot in exile as much as the Ashkenazim did. Sadly, the Ashkenazim had to move from one country to another as they dispersed. So he says, therefore, that is why there's less reliability in the Ashkenazi custom. And he goes so far as telling his Sephardim that they should not even daven at the Omud in an Ashkenazi synagogue, because they should always stick to their Sephardi tradition. And even when they're saying Kaddish in an Ashkenazi synagogue, they should have no qualms about saying the extra tiddly bits of Revach v'Hatzalah and all this extra bit added in, which is quite surprising. But that is also Nusach Sfard, the Atzmach Tekoneh v'Korei v'Shikei. So that is Sfardi and Sfard. Yeah.
Excuse me, if somebody is saying Kaddish and is in a shul which is Sfard,
we're coming to the Minagamokam aspect a bit more later, but generally anything you do on the open in a Nusach Sfard place, you have to conform. The question might be even your quiet davening, but Minagamokam means respecting the place, which is another din on its own. And
when one is reciting Kaddish, it's not nothing to do with the place. It is,
because that is the custom of that place, and that is the way people are already saying it. So, really, someone who davens Nusach Sfard, who davens in a Nusach Ashkenaz synagogue, should not say those four words. And vice versa, when you are Nusach Ashkenaz and you're davening Nusach Sfard, you will comply with the Minhag HaMakom and you will say, the Atzmach Tekoneh v'Korei v'Shikei. Well, it's only four words anyway. So.
Just going back to what you said previously, I mean, obviously, when I govern in my son-in-law's shul in Israel, I obviously use, as most people, the Broshema, then Hadlu. They obviously do it the other way around. In fact, you get this Rabbi Unit shul up the road,
Prince
Gabriel. So, again, what does one do if one you're used to doing
Right. Can I just come to that in a moment? Because what I'm doing now is I'm finishing off this aspect and then coming over to the idea of Minhag HaMakom. Although there's no change encouraged by the sources we've quoted, the Hasidic leaders are all encouraging change to their way, because they're saying that the Ari's combination of Kabbalah, Nigla, and Nista is praiseworthy. And in practice, says the Shomer Tzion in Balocha in Yud Ches Dalud, he says no one really objects to this fact. If the Hasidim are telling their followers, do as I do, do as I say and do as I do, and when in Rome, do as the Romans do, which is the idea of the minag of the community in which you're in. So if a person takes on the Hasidic minag, and I remember this discussion took place in this very building in the 1960s when Yitzchok Katzenberg adopted the Hasidic way, and the question arose then as to whether he was able to change to Nusach Sfard, and the psak that he received was that he could. But Rabbi Cooper, who was the rav of this shul for many years, always maintained keeping up the minag which is handed down to us. Married women generally adopt the minag of their husbands, but some poskim say that women, if their husbands don't mind, can still carry on what they grew up with. The Rav David Weinberger, who was the editor of the art scroll Siddur, which started off using a Sfard and bringing in only a number of changes, and there was a bit of a mishmash, and his daughter was getting married, she complained to her father, apparently, that he didn't have a coherent set for Ashkenaz and Sfard, and she was getting married to a Nusach Sfard, and so he said to his daughter, oh dear, your chosan is corrupting you already. Anyway, interestingly, Rav Breisch in his Chelkas Yaakov in Chelek Aleph in chapter 79, he says that if a community exists where all the original people of that community who instigated a particular Nusach are no longer there and the community wishes to change, he says the community can have an extraordinary general meeting and a vote, and if they vote to change to a particular Nusach, then that is in order. Interesting psak. So now we can leave all that about which is better, which is worse, or can you change and can't you change, and now deal with this question which you were raising about the minag hamakom. The din is lo tiskodedu. One should not depart from the practice of the community in which one is finding oneself. What you do quietly, that is something else. So of course, nowadays though, you do get the mishmash. I mean, chalamoid with tefillin, you get shawls that some people put on and some people don't. But truly, the correct tradition is one should either do one way or another way according to the community in which you find yourself. So if you go to the Machzik Hadas in Manchester, which has like a factory of minyanim one after another, they have a notice up saying, for those who wish to wear tefillin, there is a minyan upstairs in room number 2 on the second floor, etc., etc. And so that's the tefillin minyan. Yeah, we're not going to go now into the arguments whether you should wear tefillin or not, chalamoid, but the idea is to respect the tradition. So when a new shtibel opened up very near to my home in Golders Green, and I was too lazy to go to the shul I was usually going to, which puts on tefillin, and I was going into this shtibel, I went up to the rav of this chassidic shtibel and I asked him for his permission if I could please put on my tefillin on chalamoid. And he looked very upset about it. And he said, no, please, I would ask you not to. He said, quite frankly, we regard it as an insult to the place. Mm-hmm. And if
I can appreciate that. So normally when I'm going to do that, when I'm in Israel,
Israel.
Well, the whole of Minhag Eretz Yisrael is not to wear tefillin. I even went to the Kotel when I didn't know about this as a teenager, and I thought, well, I'll go to the Kotel, I'm sure I'll find a minyan there with lays tefillin. Nobody, nowhere, anywhere will you find a minyan in Israel which lays tefillin or chalamoid.
But from my point of view, what I do is before I go to shul, I will.
Yes. So you put them on Batsinot privately in your room because that's your personal minhag. But one doesn't do anything which can insult others.
I can understand that. That's
yeah.
Possible.
Although nowadays, you know, you get shuls where it's a real hodgepodge. Some are putting on, some aren't putting on. But that principle of los iskodedu we carried forward. So the general rule which is brought, and there are numerous poskim who write on this subject, the Piskei Teshuvos in Siman Samaches, Sifkot and Kaftes lists loads and loads of different teshuvos on this subject. So we're not going to go through all of those because we'll be here for a week. But if one looks at it, the general consensus is, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. So you will follow the tradition, and not only in the Nusach, but also, let's say, with Tachanun, yeah, because in Nusach Sfad, they start off standing, yeah, and then they sit down. We in Nusach Ashkenaz start off sitting. So he says, you should do what they are doing. So if they start off standing, you should start off standing. Ah, what about the actual prayer itself? Well, the general rule of thumb is this, that if you are saying privately and quietly your own davening, which is not openly seen by others, then good luck to you. You can do what you like. Although there are some who differ and say even your quiet davening should be like them. But the general attitude of Poskim is, if it's quiet, you're doing your own thing, people don't notice, there's no conflict, that's okay. Los iskodedu means don't openly differ to what the others are doing around you. So what about when it comes to Kedusha? They say Naritzoch and we say Nekadesh. Or on Shabbos Musaf, Keser Yitnu Lecho, we say Naritzoch. The Briskerov said it's okay to say Nekadesh unless you're davening at the Omud, but lots of other poskim, including Reb Moshe Feinstein, say when you are davening with them, when you are speaking the Kedusha, it's like something which is public. Even though not, people might not hear you, people are talking it aloud, and therefore, says Reb Moshe, when you're davening with Nusach Sfad, you should say Keser and rather than Lumosom Baruch Yomeru, because although you might be saying it quietly, these are things which people are saying aloud. The Minchas Yitzchok in Chelek Zayin in Siman Hay, he says all the Kedusha should be regarded as something which is done betzibor openly, so you should do it the way they do it. But what about the quiet shemun? And let's say you're davening at the Omud. So you're usually davening Nusach Ashkenaz. When you're davening at the Omud, you'll say the Atzmach Pekunei V'Kurim Mishichei. And when you do your Chazaras Hashatz, your repetition, you're obviously going to do the Nusach Sfad. So what about when you're doing your quiet shemun Estra, when you're the Chazan? You might think, oh, well, I'm doing my quiet shemun Estra, and therefore nobody can hear what I'm saying, so I'll do my own shtick, and afterwards when I'm doing aloud. So that's a very interesting question which comes up. Because really, what is the whole idea behind the quiet Shemona Esra? According to the Rambam, the Ikat Tfilah B'Tzibur is the Chazaras HaShat. That, unfortunately, people don't realize when they're schmoozing that during the repetition, that is the Tfilah B'Tzibur. Ah, so why are we davening a quiet Shemona Esra? Why isn't that then the real Tfilah B'Tzibur? So when you look at the various sources, it's based on a machlokas in Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lama Gimel Amud Beis. Does each individual recite the Shemona Esra? All right, there's the problem that if you say that the Chazaras HaShat is the main Shemona Esra, then why can't I just schmooze? Why do I have to say the quiet Shemona Esra? I'll listen to the Chazan. But that's the problem, because people might start schmoozing. So the Chazan is told, say a quiet Shemona Esra in order to rehearse, in order so that you can practice doing your Shemona Esra in preparation for doing the repetition. And everybody else is saying the quiet Shemona Esra because the Chazan is saying the quiet Shemona Esra. That's how it originated. So really, if you are davening at the Omud in a Nusach Sfad Shul, your quiet Shemona Esra should really also be Nusach Sfad, because you are meant to be rehearsing for the repetition. So says the Magen Avraham.
The Baal Tefillah.
Yeah, yeah, the Baal Tefillah.
I heard from Dine Greenhouse that the Ikka Tefillah is the quiet Shemona.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important everybody starts at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, there are the different views. I was in a shtiebel once where a Mashulach came in collecting money, but he thought he'll get much more money if the Gubba goes round with him. So he went up to the Gubba and he managed to persuade the Gubba to go around, you know, cajoling people, come on, give a bit more. And this was in Chazaras HaShat. And, well, I've got no objection to giving, but, you know, you want to hear what the Chazan's saying. So I said to this Gubba afterwards, you know what the Rambam says about Chazaras HaShat? It's the Ikka Tefillah B'Tzibur. Then he shrugged, he said, well, I don't have a problem with that. Anyway.
You've got a problem that even in the Nusach Sfad, there are hundreds of variations.
Yeah.
Look at just one example in Shemona Esra. Do you say Avarachmin Shemakalena? Do you say Shemakalena Avarachmin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you say Shemakalena without Avarachmin? It just depends which stable you're in. So, and then they don't always have the right siddur for their Nusach. So you're really
stuck. And there is a variety of different Nusach Sfad.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you say Metzapim Meshua, Metzapim Chomid Leshua? Yeah, there are so many of these variations. And when you look in the Nusach Sfad Sidurim, you've got various bits in brackets, which some of them say and some of them don't say.
I understand, weren't the Nusach Hatzino. They were masakim, saying these particular brachot. How you ended up actually working out the wordage, if that's the right word, surrounding the brachot of Birchas Aminim or Kedusha or whatever.
You're raising a topic which is more complicated than it sounds. It's true that Chazal were masakin. Chazal did say, right, a certain number of brachas, 18 brachas, and later on adding one more, 19. And we are all doing the same number of brachas.
Right.
Right, apart from a kadesh to Shemo Barabim. But otherwise, we're doing the same number of brachas. And we are fairly close, and the variations are, relatively speaking, minute. But yeah, you're right. They didn't actually give us, or as far as we know, a text. Or if they did,
there wasn't that. That's the word. The brocha itself.
Yes, but it seems that because of the golos we're in and the exile we've suffered and moving around, and remember, printing of Sidurim only started in the Middle Ages, so that the davening beforehand had its variations simply because people didn't have written texts. So there's the sociology aspect which probably influences it. But we do at least have an essential structure which we share with each other. The general rule of thumb is that anything which requires a minyan to be said, you're best off, like the Kedusha, you should really conform to the Tzibur in which you're in. And otherwise, you can do your own bits and pieces.
Excuse me, if you go to a shul, you now have the choice Sidurim, Ashkenaz.
Yes, they put out different Sidurim.
So therefore, so if I automatically pick up an Ashkenaz, and you're suggesting that if I'm doing the silent, obviously if I'm doubling the Shlich Sibur, then I understand, you know, I'm doubling the Buddha, so then I can't. But if I'm myself, right, okay, I'm davening, I'm not doing different kedusha, I'm doing the kadesh, for instance.
Yes.
Yeah? You're saying I shouldn't do that?
Well, one can call into question the correctness of a shul putting out different kinds of sidurim. It's politically correct, it's done by demand, so you walk into a shul, you'll find Nusach Ashkenaz, and you'll get Art Scroll and Singers, and Tiras Kolpeh, and you'll get Nusach Sfad, and you'll find Nusach Ari, the Chabadniks. You know, the shul wants to put on a service. But really, each shul should conform to a particular custom and stick to it, and the people visiting should stick to that as well, in order to gain that uniformity and the Lotus Godadu, that people are not making divisions. But you'll say, well, in our divisions by our strength, that is now the way it is nowadays. But
like a Shalom Bayit, doing it.
Yeah, so we don't want any arguments in the Tzibur. That's right.
In the Tzibur, what I went to the Baruch Shalom, I don't know what it's like now, but in the early days, in the 80s, anybody who doesn't look on the, because we had Iranians and Germans and English people.
Yeah.
Wherever anybody doesn't, that's what they done.
Which? Right, so what you're saying is
the
minog of the place to do what each individual wants. And certainly if it's not a minog kavua, one person stands up at a wedding, you know, mincha, mincha, and he davens his way, and everybody just follows on. And you can get him with 9 Ashkenaz standing behind him, and they're davening Sfad. But when there is a structure, and we've got comfort from the Chasam Sofer and others who say you shouldn't change, but do what you feel okay with. But then there's the Losis Godadu, and what we've got is a fragmentation which results from this long golos we've been suffering from for thousands of years. And please God, when Mashiach comes, we will not have the same Nusach Tefillah anymore. We won't be praying for the restoration because we will have had it. But we will expect a new Nusach, which hopefully everybody, Nusach Ashkenaz Nix, Nusach Sfad Nix, the Sfadim, will all conform to in the future, and that will lead to an Achdus in Klal Yisrael, and may that change happen soon, speedily in our days. Thank you.
People start from the morning, you know, in Israel, you go to Manchester, they start, you usually have people start from East Abbas. The other one you go to, you just start from Kalidu. When you go to Israel, there are places where you just start from the and beforehand,
very true. Thank you.